Support for today's show is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I won't tweet out anything else, like no information about baseball or football. I don't care about this signing or Trubisky, but Cookie Monster, I'll retweet him.
Yeah.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
All right, time for the Fantasy Focus Baseball for Thursday, March 15, 2018. The season starts 2 weeks from today, so get those drafts moving. I am Eric. He is Tristan. Thanks, as always, to our producer today, Anthony Colata-Yude, pushing all the buttons, Leo Howell, our fine editorial watchdog, and I hear that moniker has stuck, by the way, and indispensable Kyle Soppy, an integral part of the show and a good pal to boot. Tristan, you have Tout Wars this weekend. Are you excited?
Of course I'm excited. How can you not get excited for draft day? It's the best day of the year.
So there's a lot of best days of the year. This will be, what, your 12th title when you win?
Oh, jeez.
How many championships have you won?
Oh, you jinxed it already.
There's no such thing as a jinx, by the way.
Oh, there's totally a jinx. Totally. Yes.
We're going to have a good show today. See, that's not a jinx. It's going to be a good show, right?
This is true. It will.
So a little bit later, Tristan will tell us how he's preparing for Tout. That's always exciting. And actually, there's a lot of good stuff on ESPN Fantasy. Not that you should be surprised by this, but today, Tristan's playbook, Tips from an Expert That Wins League, was posted. We're going to talk a little bit about that. AJ Mass has his Rule of 7, how to scout pitchers. We have some injury news to discuss as well. And a little bit later on, the Hash Browns with Kyle. Here is the buzz. All right, let's play a little game here about players 1 to 10. Are you worried about them? 2 weeks to go before the season. I think it's reasonable. A lot of people still have drafts to go. Obviously, you do. I think I might be done. No, I think I have one more.
You can't possibly be done at this point. Come on. I'm going to have to get you in another draft now.
Yeah, not going to happen. No one's inviting me. I can't play until I don't win. So you can play, so you win.
I'll make sure to invite you so you can't say no one invited you.
So let's let's name some players here, and you just tell me if you're concerned or not. If you're not concerned, okay. It's a 1. If you are concerned, it's a 10 or a 5 or whatever you think, 10 being the most concern.
Arizona is terrified. Okay.
You know who's first. Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher Zach Greinke, who left after one inning yesterday. I was actually watching the game, and I had it on mute, which I do now with all the announcers. And, I didn't know what was wrong. It turns out it was a groin injury, and a groin injury can be serious. He could be out 6 weeks, or he can make his next outing. Obviously, there was a lot of talk about his velocity on his fastball being down. So what say you? Are you concerned about Zach Greinke?
I'll say 2, and that's just the groin injury because I don't like to see injuries in this close proximity to opening day. But the velocity question, that's a 1 for me. I really don't. Let's average it. 3 and 1. 3 for the injury, 1 for the velocity. It was up a little bit in this outing, so that's a plus. While we have a negative here, we do have the plus that he did seem to throw a little bit closer to his norms. And I think he was talking it up. It's around that dead arm phase.
Yeah, I have really no concerns either. In fact, a colleague of ours, in fact, the original editorial watchdog, asked us a question. He texted us the other day. He wanted to draft Greinke in a league, and I said, no, I have no concerns whatsoever, and apparently you don't either. And I don't think that really changed yesterday after he left that outing early. I just don't think he cares about spring training. I think a lot of people don't care, unless you're trying to make a team. And he's the ace. It's not a big deal to him. So when will we worry? I guess the next outing is kind of be important. He kind of needs to go 4 or 5 innings in his next outing, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Who was the guy I was watching last night? It was pitching. It was either in the 5th or 6th inning, and he has pitch count up over 50. We're at that point where we're looking at 1 or 2 more starts for starting pitchers. If he misses one, that would be a big setback, unless they're going to throw him on one of the backfields. So that's the only reason why. Like, I'd note it down just to say, check back, make sure he makes the next turn. There's no further setback.
All right, next up, let's see, Dodgers shortstop Corey Seager, who, we haven't really talked about at all. and or written about, as far as I can tell. I try to read everything at ESPN's Fantasy. And he has an elbow issue. You know, his numbers last year were fine, but obviously didn't do much in the playoffs because of the elbow, has barely played this spring. There's no question, he says, he'll be ready to go by opening day. But I have to admit, I did downgrade him a little bit over the last week or two because I'm a little concerned here. And then I look closer at his numbers. And because, who was it? Somebody, people were making fun of me because I spent as much on Manuel Margot in labor as Seager went for, which obviously in context you can't possibly know. Seager was like 2 hours before. But then I thought about it. If Seager does exactly what he did last season, it's fine. But a lot of guys are going to produce him. 22 homers, 77 RBI, 295. He doesn't steal bases, so that's a big problem. What if his elbow's a problem? Are you concerned? My concern here, I'm going to go first, is actually like a 5 now.
And I'm tempted to raise the caution level that high. I'm going to throw I'm going to throw a 3 here. I'm actually more bothered not by the elbow, but by the fact that he finished last year with issues, and that was with his back. So throw that possibility of lurking back up here at any point during this year, and there are some things to be worried about. Now, the problem is, let's take this twofold. You mentioned the comparison to Margot. Which is more important to you, the premium on shortstops or the premium on steals?
There is no premium on shortstops anymore.
Oh, there are people who absolutely disagree with you on that, and I'll tell you, I'm with you, and I think we're the correct ones, that there is no premium that should be placed upon shortstops. It should be placed upon stolen bases, so I'm with you on the Margot bid. I think there was a reason to do that. In Seager's case, he falls in that soft period of the draft for me, and look at the ADP, it backs it up, where you don't feel great about any one player. It's why I'm getting Justin Upton a lot in that range, in the fourth round we're talking typically. If Seager falls into that range, I still like his upside comparative to some of the other players.
I did not put Seager on my do not draft list, but I actually thought about it for where his ADP is, which is all that is. Okay, obviously I was going to leave with Ohtani. That was published a couple days ago. Today, by the way, it's Plant My Flag, which is players that I do like, led by Kyle's favorite and mine, Alex Bregman. And don't worry, Kyle. The pitcher's on there. The pitcher's on there. Team
We're
going
to have a lot of
hashtag
common players, apparently. Margo's on there.
I've got Chatwood in a bunch of leagues. The point is, on Seager, it's not just that I'm worried about his numbers being kind of average now that shortstops aren't special. It's now that I'm worried about the injury, too. I'm going to move him down to like 40 or 45, I think, in my rankings.
Then I'm going to be getting him on a lot of teams because I feel like once he gets into the 40s, that's a little too late.
I want Bregman over Seager. I want Nelson Cruz over Seager. Right. Are you worried about Nelson Cruz? Nelson Cruz is the only player in baseball who every year hits 39 home runs. He's done it each of the past four seasons, and it comes with a lot of RBI and a lot of runs scored and a lot of batting average, and he never misses games. But right now, he has a grade one quad strain. He says it's no big deal. Do you agree? My level here of concern is like a 2.
I'd say in his case it's a 3 just because quad strains can end up costing you a couple of weeks on the DL, but I think we're also going to get an answer on that before we get into the weekend drafts, so it might not matter here. I think it's one that you have to pay very close attention to see if there's an update on it, because before that, when he was missing time, I believe it was with an illness. This is just a, over the past 24 to 48 hours thing.
Detroit Tigers pitcher Michael Fulmer, who really has not pitched very well this spring. And in his case, because he was dealt with injuries last year and it's an elbow issue, I actually am concerned. What say you about Michael Fulmer? Is he a guy who I think the case could have been made a couple weeks ago that he was a borderline top 40 starting pitcher. Is he still that way for you? I'm going to say my level of concern is like a 5.
I'll say my level of concern for him is an 8. I'm not a Fulmer guy. I very likely will not get him on any teams. And it's less that I'm panicked about the injury than the fact that he has one really sets him back. He's not a strikeout guy. He needs to be on point with his stuff. And I don't tend to like to draft players like that. I think that if there's any question they could come into games at less than peak form, this style of pitcher, I'd tend to fade them.
Kyle has some names here that have pitched well this week. Jake Junis, who pitched really well against San Diego the other day, not being drafted in standard leagues. Top 60 for you or still not yet?
Still not yet, but I want to make the case. I'm more pro Junis than anti. I think he is mixed league draft worthy, but I don't know if the skill set is up there with one of the better guys in the league.
Trevor Bauer being drafted as starting pitcher 30. He's pitching very well, a lot of strikeouts. I've kind of moved up a couple Cleveland pitchers this preseason. I moved up Mike Clevinger quite a bit. He's in the rotation. It's a lot of strikeout potential. Bauer, too, I moved up. I mean, to be a top 30 pitcher, that's really good, you know? Right?
Really, really good, yeah. I mean, the context of a top 30 pitcher is a little different than it was 5 years ago. We'd probably be looking at 40 for the baseline for that. But I'm with you. I think Bauer looks very good. I'm a pro Trevor Bauer guy. I've been waiting forever for this guy. And I've also moved Clevenger up. I'm apparently way behind the rest of the pack with Mike Clevenger just because I don't think that his raw stuff is elite. I think his control is elite. And that warranted a bump up into the mix to a definite relevant mixed league pick.
When do you start to pay attention to the pitcher's spring training numbers? Because the starting pitchers are actually facing, in a general sense, the top hitters as well. Lineups don't turn over and leave until like the fourth or fifth inning most of the time. Now they're playing a little bit longer here. But Tyler Chatwood, who we talked about, and we do it for fun, and I can't understand, maybe Kyle's like his cousin or something, but he is having a great spring. 0.82 ERA. And he did leave Coors Field, and he is going to a good team with a good defense and a better ballpark. I mean, I've moved Tyler Chatwood up like every time I've updated my rankings this spring. Still not top 50, but he's going to get close at some point. Don't you agree?
50 might be pushing it a little bit. I am also pro Chatwood. I've gotten a couple of shares of him. As for the spring training numbers, I mean, honestly, they matter on the day that never arrives. I don't think that the spring training numbers really have any weight beyond if there's something in the underlying stats. For example, I've mentioned K to walk rate, if something change, if the K rate elevates a certain amount, if the control is elite, if the velocity readings, which don't show up on the stat ledger here, you'd have to watch the games for that. If those are showing any sort of variation compared to past years, then I would pounce. In Chatwood's case, I don't know that spring training was going to tell us an awful lot about him because we were looking at core stats versus road. I don't think we can really neutralize those in Chicago by looking at spring training stats. For me, it's just I think that he had great road performance. I thought it was a good pickup for the Cubs. I think at the very least he's a top 70 starting pitcher.
What's the upside here? 350 ERA? 7.5 K per nine?
Well, actually, I think he might get a little beyond that with K's. And if he does, I mean, we're looking at maybe a borderline top 50
starting. Yeah, that's almost a top 50 starting pitcher if you can win 14 games with a 350 ERA. I mean, if we did a name game, we could compare him to people that, frankly, let's do a name game.
That's how you play the name game, people.
Chris Davis is not going away.
Am I the striking tall debonair one?
Wow, what's the hate for Cologne for?
He steals from a buffet before I can get to it. So I'm sorry, I just can't go for that.
Mom, where's the chicken parm?
Don't say Cliff Lee's name. No.
Are you okay? Do you need professional help?
You really don't grant Mariano Rivera, of all people, that one exception.
Dude, he's 43 years old and he tore his ACL last year.
I'm a little bit dismayed and embarrassed by some of the things that I've said on this show over the years.
Yeah, me too.
He was pretty good that year, Mr. Mo.
I think it's actually legitimate to do a name game with this guy because I think he was a guy trending in the right direction. So let me ask you. So Tyler Chatwood's ADP right now. I know Kyle's loving this. Kyle, you're third cousin, second cousin, really? How are you related to Tyler?
We're not related at all.
Not related at all?
Chat God. Yeah, no, not related, but enjoying this. Very, very happy.
Because your love seems like a bordering on like the, you know, I'm starting to get concerned.
Chatwood's actually in studio with us just handing dollar bills to Kyle as he pumps up his draft value. So.
Wow, he could be bought that cheap? Come on!
ADP. Doesn't take much.
Kyle, a couple bucks, he won't draft any of my players. What
not
do you
a
say?
One.
Deal?
Not a one.
looks like 23rd round for Tyler Chatwood in ADP. So right now, Tyler Chatwood versus Michael Fulmer. Who's the number 49 pitcher and 19th round. I would take Chatwood now. I'm concerned enough about Fulmer.
I can make the case. I still think from a basic perspective, I'm going to take Fulmer there.
All right, would you take Chatwood or the unemployed Alex Cobb?
See, this is driving me crazy about Alex Cobb. Is I love what he could potentially bring, but the further we get towards opening day, he's going to be moving down a good 5 to 8 spots in my rankings. I'd say they're right around on the same level, and because I need guys pitching, it's Chatwood.
He's not signing until June after the
day. Oh,
nobody's going to give away a draft pick to sign Alex Cobb. How about Julio Teheran or Chatwood? I would take Teheran there.
Yeah, I like Teheran. I just admire the pitch selection he offers.
All right, Felix Hernandez is still going two rounds ahead of Chatwood, and Felix Hernandez is hurt again.
Ooh,
Felix Hernandez is undraftable.
It's Chatwood.
There's no point in drafting Felix Hernandez in a 10 or 12 team league anymore.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, Chatwood, I think it's versus Chatwood and by a handy margin.
Man, there's some guys in this range who just are really underrated. Like Tanner Roark, I know you're not a fan. I am. He's way higher in my rankings. He has to be. Clevenger as well. I'm just looking at ADP here. How about Jordan Montgomery?
I'd take Chatwood there, and part of it has to do with the National League. I like Montgomery. I think he's a good pitcher, but I don't think he's elite. I feel like the ceiling isn't especially high.
The pitchers who are being really underdrafted, that I just looking at ADP after like round 18, Aaron Sanchez is back. He's healthy. He's going to be great. Yep. Aaron Sanchez of Toronto going around 21, move him up. Tehran, move him up. Marco Estrada, skills are fine. Chatwood, move him up. Tanner Roark, good team. Clevenger, good team. Good strikeouts. Move these guys up. All right, let's pivot
over. Where do you have Chatwood anyway among starters? All right, well, the one thing I want to hesitate on, because we sing his praises.
All right, you're right.
What is his career high, his pro high in innings pitched?
I don't care.
No, it does. It absolutely matters.
It doesn't.
Are you kidding me? It totally matters.
Because
the foundation
Coors Field
of this argument.
No, because he pitched at Coors Field. So it affects everything. It affects the innings, the health, the numbers. There's no reason why Tyler Chatwood can't throw 175 innings this season. No reason.
Yeah, all right, 175 I'll bite on, but 200 I think is getting too aggressive.
10 guys threw 200 innings last year. The new 200 is 175 is the new 200. 25 guys can do that. 30 guys.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, he could get there, but I don't even think that's necessarily a lock. The guy's never thrown more than 167 in the third innings.
I don't
never.
Care. I have Chatwood at number 57 among starting pitchers, so I already had him well above. Okay.
Yeah, we're both pretty pro Chatwood then. We've been convinced by someone.
I guess so. Tout Wars is this weekend. You're in the National League only. Give us some tips. Like, how do you approach it? You've won that league three times, four times? I'm serious. How many times have you won?
I won three times.
You won three
it's
in
been
a row.
A couple of, and by a few years, and I finished second last year, just to be clear. By the way, the first place team was a runaway, so.
All right, you don't brag. Okay, I mean, we know you're good.
The guy who won did a really good year, Robbie Ray.
So great. What tips can you give us? Because, you know, people out there are going to do auctions this weekend, and they can do them on ESPN Fantasy, I believe. So tell us, like, what you're thinking. Tips are posted, so people can read them, too.
The playbook is out there right now. One of the differences between Tout Wars and our traditional league is that they replace batting average with on-base percentage. So other than that, it's a standard NL-only league, which means that the walkers move up in value. I'm going to be looking pretty heavily at guys like Carlos Santana, who draws some walks, Domingo Santana, who has a better on-base than batting average, Yasmani Grandal, if the price ends up being right at catcher. I like to go with those guys who give me a baseline of 340, 350 on-base, who might have questionable batting average. They tend to be some of the better bargains. But Eric, we've been talking about this all preseason. I'm putting a premium on stolen bases. I might well be in the Trey Turner bidding beyond $40. I think he's going for at least that much. And even in the on-base percentage league, I think there is a premium to be paid for those steals. It has nothing to do with him being a shortstop. It has to do with him giving me a strong starting point in that important category.
I don't think I paid any attention to positions in labor 2 weekends ago. I really don't.
I noticed you didn't, because you didn't put much in the infield, and I don't blame you.
I didn't put much. I spent $20 on each of my first three infielders. I had Santana. I had a second base. I had VR. I mean, I spent money.
You got a starting third baseman.
You know what? I knew about that even before. Like, I feel so happy about that. Now, maybe Brian Anderson will not do anything statistically. But I thought even if Martin Prado wasn't hurt, that Brian Anderson was going to be the starting third baseman from Miami. And I don't want to get too much into this, because obviously he could end up with 14 home runs and about 270, which doesn't matter in ESPN Standard League, a 10-team points or roto. Nobody will care. But most of you play in deeper leagues, right? I mean, the deeper leagues are where it's at. You want to have two catchers. You want to have 14 teams or something like that, or a deep bench, or a 50-rounder like we've done a few times. That's more fun to me, because in a 10-team, like, I'll take anybody, because free agency is so buoyant. I can do whatever I want if somebody gets hurt. Ronald Acuna's already been demoted, and Scott Kingery's next. I move them up in 10-team leagues, because I can easily replace them.
This is a week where a lot of the good prospects have been demoted. We saw Francisco Mejia get demoted. We saw Willie Calhoun unexpectedly get demoted. I think that's a service time thing. Gleyber Torres got demoted.
Time is different for certain players, we should note.
Yes.
So, like, Acuna and Kingery have never played in the majors, so their service time is like 3 weeks into April. But guys like Willie Calhoun, who have played, their service time issue is going to be like the second week of May, right? Isn't that how it works?
Yes, the estimated date, I believe, for Calhoun was May 3rd.
Okay, so it's a little bit different here. And, you know, you just have to you have to know in advance what it's like. If they played in the majors last year, it could affect their service time. Nick Senzel might be like midseason for different reasons.
Oh, I like him, especially if he gets other positions than third base. But to your point about that, I think a lot of times you'll find that the players who are being drafted between 251 and 500 overall in traditional ADP are the ones who are going to end up winning leagues. That's why we like talking about players like this.
Our latest mock draft has also been posted. There were two catchers there, which really didn't affect how I looked at things at all. You had the second
pick.
They
went late.
Yeah, I just still waited. I still just couldn't make a case for, like, I know somebody who's right now listening to this show live took Buster Posey early, but I just can't do it. He's just not that good statistically. Look, he wins World Series. He might go to the Hall of Fame. I understand that. But all I care about is the fact that in the last two seasons, he's hit 26 home runs. That's it. That's all he's done. That's not enough for me. And I see no reason why that's going to change this year. He's averaged 13 the last 2 years. This is who he is now. The new baseline. Not even sure he should be top 100 anymore. Gary Sanchez is a little bit different. He could hit 35 home runs. And it's not all about home runs. But, you know, if Buster Posey is going to hit 13 home runs and nobody's going to draft Robinson Chirinos and he's going to hit more, I just don't understand how Buster Posey goes 60th in a draft. But that's
in a two-catcher league, I get it. And I'm with you that I
still,
think...
No. How can you justify Buster Posey at pick 60 when Robinson Chirinos either doesn't get drafted or goes in round 25? When they're going to have maybe the same power numbers, and you're talking about a difference of, what, 30 batting average points makes up all that? I just don't get it. I don't.
Chirinos is going to get drafted in a two-catcher league, though, and he's not going to be the last guy off the board, which is the problem.
He went
pretty
late in this league. The point is, that was the one major change. It was a two-catcher league. I took my first catcher in round 22, Austin Hedges. It didn't matter to me. I just want numbers at that point. I want double-digit home runs and don't hit 210. That's all I'm worried about at that point.
I'll note an important difference here is that we're talking about, in that one, it was a head-to-head categories league. If there was this was a points league, it's the right price for Buster Posey because of the playing time.
Fair enough. Was there anything else about this league other than the catchers? Because obviously we spend a lot of time talking about catchers and the way we handle catchers at ESPN leagues is different than everybody else. But closers, anything about that? I'm noticing now that I'm drafting in certain ways. And when I do mocks, I don't take, like, I know that some people, like, try different things in mock drafts to see if they like it. I know AJ does that. I don't do that. I have a comfort level. I end up doing the same thing every time because I want to, like, perfect how I want to draft. So I'm never obviously taking the top closers. I'm not taking a closer to, like, round 11, 12. But then I keep ending up with some of the same guys. Anything that you're doing?
I am trying to get one of the four aces and go pretty heavily on taking that guy and then going very cheap for the rest of my pitching staff, with the exception of trying to lock in a closer somewhere in that maybe round a 12 to 14 range. But the issue is I'm finding I'm not getting them in a lot of cases. In this draft, I had the number two pick. There was really no chance that I was going to get one of those four because I'm not passing up Trout or Altuve in one of the top two spots. So in that case, I have to go with higher upside players. I know Kyle pointed out here that I took a couple of risky players. I took Carlos Carrasco. I took Rich Hill as two of my first three pitchers off the board. What I was aiming for is I'm going to just mix and match here and there, and I want the highest upside on a per start basis. That's going to be my goal if I don't end up with one of the top four.
I don't see Carrasco as risky. Rich Hill, I do. All right, we'll get to all the questions in a minute, but first, support for Fantasy Focused Baseball also comes from our friends at MeUndies. You want to look good in your underwear? Who doesn't? And be comfortable. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies. They're the perfect balance of comfortable fit. Every month they have new and exciting prints, and they arrive at your door in a fun bag. MeUndies uses Lensing Micromodal in their underwear. I hope I said that right. It's a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fiber that starts with beechwood trees and ends with the most amazing fabric you've ever experienced. The results have been downright dreamy. Their adventurous prints and designs are all limited edition, and new patterns are released every few weeks on a rolling basis. MeUndies has an exclusive offer for our listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you purchase any MeUndies, you get 20% off and free shipping. They're so sure you'll love their underwear, and you will. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund, but you're not going to need to. This is a no-brainer. Get 20% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you will ever put on. To get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/FFB. That's MeUndies.com/FFB. All right, so there's two full weekends left before games start. It's weird because usually I'm so used to a Sunday or Monday. So we will have Monday, Thursday shows next week, obviously. And then the following week, that Thursday, will be opening day, which will be pretty cool. So the season's coming fast. Now, I know everybody's getting ready for the NCAA tournament, which has already started. And hopefully you got your brackets in. Tristan, who you got winning the NCAA tournament? We'll go around the table here, proverbial table, since we're not in the same place.
I took UVA. I took a layup.
Virginia. Okay.
Yeah.
I have Villanova. Kyle, who you got winning the tournament?
I'm rolling with Purdue. A little bit of a contrarian
play. Purdue. I don't like that pick. They're in Villanova's brag side.
That they are.
So you're suspended for 30 seconds. Watchdog, what you got?
Villanova.
Yeah!
Oh,
I
man!
Like you.
I would say Penn, but I don't see that going so hot. Anthony, what do you have? Who do you have winning?
I'm going with Kyle. I got Purdue as well.
Yeah, I don't like you either.
yeah.
I guess it's possible. Anything's
possible. Smack talk.
But, you know, see, it could happen because Villanova either wins the national title, which happened once, or they lose in the second round on Sunday every year or Saturday. So hopefully they won't lose to Purdue. They wouldn't play them until the following
By the
weekend.
Way, don't worry. I've jinxed them because the only time they won, that was the only time I've ever gotten the champion right, ever. and I didn't pick them this year. Ooh, dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun. Kyle, what do you got?
Well, we got some hash browns as always. Hashtag 06010MLB the night before our podcast, and we'll get through as many as we can. Dan is looking at the recent Ron Chandler piece about players gaining value that aren't currently being drafted as first rounders. He wants to know who you think will enter the top 15 discussion when we do this podcast 365 days from today. So who is going to be a first rounder that isn't being drafted as a first rounder?
He knows we're taping 365 days from today and doesn't even know what day of the week it is.
Yeah, we may have to.
Let's write it in.
You know, I read that piece, and Ronnie does great work, of course. And you'll see him at Tout this weekend, I think, right?
I will.
There was a name missing there, and I thought that's why I'll write about Alex Bregman. I think Alex Bregman could return top 10 value. He could hit 30 home runs, steal 20 bases, bat 320. I believe that. Maybe I'm wrong. Kyle believes it. I know that.
Yes, sir.
So I would say Alex Bregman would be on that list for me. I could see a path for Byron Buxton. I don't think he'll get there. I think Bregman's more likely to hit his peak. But if Byron Buxton has like 20 homers and 45 steals, I mean, that's first round pick next year.
By the way,
that's what the question is, right?
Yeah, I know you and Kyle are singing his praises. I want to jump on your bandwagon here because one point people are missing about Bregman is that he's a lot better at stealing bases than people think he is, and that's what could potentially drive him up into the top 15. I would say, yes, I'm with you. He is head and shoulders the guy, I think, who's going beyond round four, who could very well get into the top 15. Buxton, you mentioned, Eric, definitely too. We mentioned Carrasco. I think Carrasco on the pitching side, if somebody who's not one of the big four does get in there, I think he has an excellent chance of being that. I think there's a chance Andrew Benintendi could get
30,
in there 30. In the best case scenario.
He's on my – I see you read my – I'm so happy you read my article today. Yes, he is on my plant my flag. That's a potential 30-30 guy. He went 20-20 as a rookie. And Jose Ramirez could do it too. He could get up there.
After I read your piece, I did scratch Bregman from mine because I'm very pro Bregman.
Oh, you're doing it too? When is yours coming out?
Mine will be out tomorrow. The Tristan's 20. But I
well,
took him out of
scratch names just because I have mine. That's ridiculous.
Well, no, actually it's not because I feel like if you don't feel you're the highest on the player, why are you putting them in a list of guys that you're convinced you're going to get in every draft? I think there's a good chance based on Bregman's buzz that I'm not going to get him. I scratched Ozzie Albies from this list because out in the industry, there are a ton of people who like Ozzie Albies. I don't think there's a high likelihood I'm going to get either of those two players.
I have Bregman 32. I think you'd be hard pressed.
Yeah,
to
so I'm not
going to
get him. Right. That's the, and no, by the way, you are not the high out there in the industry. I've seen a higher rank. It was 27 or 28, I think. So there's a league you might not get him, but I won't if I'm in one with you.
I think I have any more leagues. What's next, Kyle?
All right, Harrison. He's been listening to you guys obviously discuss the lack of position scarcity that we have in today's game. So he says without that being a major concern, he's in a 5x5 auction, and he wants to know what categories are scarce. What categories you're targeting ahead of everything else. Tristan mentioned stolen bases, but he wants you to rank the categories.
It's all stolen bases, really. I mean,
steals, and then 10 steps down, we get to what?
I mean, steals and saves are the only ones I really worry about. If you go in the ESPN Fantasy Baseball Nav, okay, there's a word called projections. You can click on projections, and you can see how we at ESPN Fantasy project every player. Home runs, RBI, steals, runs, average, and then the pitching side, all their stuff, too. And, you know, it's sorted properly, and you can see by our ranking, and then you can also sort by the statistic. So if you go to stolen bases for the hitters, okay, you'll see that we project, what, five guys to steal 35 bases or more? I mean, that's six.
But one is exactly
VR right there. Bradley Zimmer is projected at 34. I would project like half of that. So, like, that's just my opinion. But wow, right. The Shields, 39 steals and 101 runs. He's on my plant my flag list.
Be on mine too.
There's a lot of there's not a lot of stolen bases out there. Now, some would argue that the stolen bases aren't going down as quickly as we say, but there's still top end guys. It's just like the middle class is a little bit scary. Like Malik Smith of Tampa Bay, I could see him stealing 45 or 20. He just has to play. Why is the Bradley Zimmer one? That's really aggressive. I don't agree with it, but I respect it.
There are actually a lot of projection-based sources out there. We also mentioned off of our site, Zips is one, Steamer is one, Pecota is another, who are very pro-Bradley Zimmer based on the minor league numbers and the translations from those. And I think a lot of these are projecting as if they assume at his age he's going to remain healthy, did have the injury question at the end of the year. So I think that's the reason. I'm with you, Eric. I think that's too high a stolen base projection. For me, the thing that struck me in that category was the drop from 3 to 4, which is 18 stolen bases going from Trey Turner's 57 to aforementioned DeShields' 39. That is the reason people are paying premiums like D. Gordon. He was $32 in labor, which seems crazy, and Trey Turner, who went over 40 to, what was he, 42?
Something like that. I wasn't paying attention because there was no way I was paying that.
43 bones in LA.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot.
And that's the thing. I mean, like, those two guys give you a great baseline. The difference between them is that Gordon gives you no power. I'll point out, when I did the look at the position breakdowns, D. Gordon's gains in stolen bases in this environment were actually neutralized by the minimal power. So, Eric, to your point previously, I think this was on last week's show, just be careful. It does leave a kind of a black hole at home runs at second base.
I'm realizing now that I have a risk on that labor team. I have two guys projected for 30. And then, like, nobody else. I have Margot and VR, and I believe in both, actually. VR's playing well. I think he's going to win the second base job. All right, and then saves is the other one, of course, because there's just, like, a third of the save situations right now are still up in the air. We think we kind of know the Angels, but we don't. We think we know the White Sox, but who knows? And there might be some surprises, you know? I could see an occasional surprise here or two. The new managers with the Mets and Phillies, don't be so sure that Neris and Familia are getting 30 saves. They might be used a little bit earlier in games, and I'm serious about that. All right, Kyle, what's next?
I like the strategy.
Yeah.
Timothy's got his eyes set on keeping a pitcher. He wants to know who has the brighter future, Berríos or Paxton?
Tristan, why can't I get on board with James Paxton? Because I'm not.
What is James Paxton's professional high in innings?
The difference between Paxton and Chatwood to me is that Chatwood hasn't really had a chance because he pitched in Denver. Paxton's had 5 years of chances and he can't stay healthy. Now, the upside is fantastic and much better than Chatwood's. I wouldn't even begin to argue that. But, I mean, I can't see Paxton getting to 175 innings. Can you? Maybe he's Rich Hill.
Paxton's pro high in innings is 171 and two-thirds. He has had 150 or more only twice in 7 professional seasons. The injury bug for him is apparent. He is a young version of Rich Hill in that regard, and I'm concerned about that. I don't think it's a good thing when a pitcher misses consistently this much time up to this point in his career early on. That's why I would take Berríos. I think Berríos has shown us that he has a little more durability, and yeah, anything can happen with pitchers, but he has comparably good stuff.
But let me make this clear, too. In a keeper league, you're not keeping either. Now, there's certain leagues that we don't know about what their rules are, but I've been getting questions where it's like, all right, I can keep 5, and here's a list of 15 guys, and I'm like, I wouldn't even consider any of the starting pitchers there, or especially the closers. Like, Jose Berríos is, I think, a better keeper than Paxton, but I don't think he's a great keeper. Like, maybe what he did last year is what he's going to do, or maybe he becomes an ace, but I just don't think pitchers are worth investing in keeper leagues all that much. I would rather take, I don't want to say any hitter in the top 100, because there's certain, obviously some I wouldn't. Like if it was the Oakland Chris Davis versus Jose Berríos in a keeper league. Like Chris Davis at some point is going to go from 40 home runs to 25 and then he's going to be done. Would you keep Berríos or Chris Davis in a keeper? Depends on the context, right?
Right, it does. And it also depends on the long-term lock in that case, but I'm in the for the most part, going to take Davis. I'm with you. I'm usually going to go with hitters. You'd need to keep at least 100 players, or it would need to be a points league that gives a significant advantage to the pitching side. That would be the only way I could make the case for Berríos or Paxton. The other thing, too, is, by the way, Eric, I don't know if you're getting these questions. I'm getting a lot of the shallow ones where you keep not even five players, sometimes three, and then I get asked, when do you take Ronald Acuña? You know, I wouldn't reach to get a player like that. Just take the best players. If you keep three players, you're keeping 30 overall. They're the stars of the league. Why are you taking a guy who's going to take a year or two to reach his full potential?
I'm all aboard the Acuña and Kingery trains here, people, but I agree with you. There's no way if you're only keeping three, you should reach like that. Unless you really think Acuña is going to be Mike Trout. Now, I'm not saying he won't be. I mean, we're projecting really nice numbers here as a rookie. What if he is Mike Trout? He could be.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine anyone
put together a Mike Trout.
I mean, the other thing, too, remember what Trout did in his actual first year.
Terrible.
I think people are forgetting that.
But we're saying the upside for Acuña is basically Buxton's upside. And, right? We just said Buxton could be a 20-homer, 40-steal guy. Yeah, yeah. Acuña could do that faster than Buxton, and it wouldn't surprise me. But ultimately, it's your team. And if you want to make Acuña a keeper over, let's say, Anthony Rendon, go ahead. I wouldn't do it, but because Rendon, this is what he is. Or if you want to keep Acuña or Kingery over Jose Abreu, go ahead. I wouldn't do that. I want to win now. But, and by the way, I was watching this guy yesterday. You want to talk about a rookie who nobody's talking about, who's really going to be good, and I'm hitching my wagon? Like, I listed like 40 players in my plant my flag. I hope that was okay, Leo. But Jesse Winker of the Reds is good. He is going to hit 300 with like 22 home runs. And you might think, oh, that's nothing. I can get anybody like that. He's a legit guy. He's going to bat. He could bat him second, score runs. On base leagues, I will target him. Jesse Winker, this is the breakout season. Anyway.
Wow. That's an aggressive projection. I'm going to look at him a little bit more closely because he fits the on base percentage angle.
And
I'll have to look at him for Saturday.
Look, you know what? He didn't hit a lot of home runs in the minors, and then he got to the majors last year and hit 7 in a month. You know why? Because the baseball's different. It's a different baseball.
Oh, no, it's not, they
say.
Oh,
it is.
Oh, I know it is. Ask Aaron Sanchez. I'll bet he'll agree with us.
Hopefully he can stay blister-free. What else we got, Kyle?
Oh, I do, too, yeah.
Alex is wondering about Matt Olson. He obviously went crazy last year with 24 homers and 45 RBI and just 189 at-bats. He wants to know what you're projecting for him this year.
Yeah, another guy on my plant my flag list. Well, I don't understand. Look, I love Rhys Hoskins as much as anybody, okay? And I've got him going in, like, round 5. And I've got Matt Olson around 10. And I feel bad about that because while Hoskins was doing what he's doing, Olson was, too. That's 24 home runs in 216 plate appearances. If you extrapolate that, guy's hitting 50. Now, I don't think he'll hit 50, but if I wrote a blog next week about guys who nobody's thinking about who could hit 40 home runs, and it wouldn't be guys like Nelson Cruz or Votto. It'd be guys who have never approached it. Matt Olson's on that list. Matt Olson, if he hit 40 home runs next year, if Greg Bird did it, I'm sure I could come up with 10 names easily enough, Leo. Matt Olson should be on that list because I don't think he would hit above 250, whereas I do see Hoskins hitting like 270. But, yes, I have underranked Matt Olson a little bit. So projection is reasonable. Let me see what our projection is at ESPN Fantasy before I comment.
I like the idea for that piece. We will definitely do that. Also, he did hit 40 home runs last year if you combine minors and majors.
Yep, there you go.
We've got Olson for 30 homers, 76 runs, 84 RBI, and a 250 average.
Yeah, he would. He might even be – like Sano would be on that list. I don't want to give it all away, obviously. Schwarber might be on that list. I don't have any problem with Schwarber. People keep, you know what I think is funny? They still tweet me that I hate Kyle Schwarber. I don't hate Kyle Schwarber. Nobody understood our argument last year. He's not going to be catcher eligible, and he never was. Even didn't even close. I was right about that. And he can't hit for average. Can't hit for average, which he can't.
Yeah.
But could Kyle Schwarber hit 40 home runs this year? Absolutely he could. He's locked in.
So, crazy me will comment that I actually like Greg Bird's skills better than Matt Olson. And the reason I like Matt Olson better for this year is just the safety in terms of health. I like the projection for him. I think the market is actually grading him pretty appropriately, though. So, Eric, what round are you looking at? I mean, are you looking at him as a top 100 player? Because I think he'd have to get there to
be... I've got... You know, I don't memorize my rankings, but I bet Olsen's right around the top 100, I would think.
It would be crazy for us to memorize all the rankings. I can't do that either.
Yes, you know what? I did in my last update, I put him at 95, which I'm sure is just crazy. You know, people are looking at that saying he's not. I have Yoan Moncada.
That's nuts.
I have Yoan Moncada at number 94, and his ADP is 172. Well, one of us is wrong. Either the collective millions of people in ADP or me. I think I'm right. I think Moncada's going to break out. I think he's legit.
I like Moncada, too. It's the question of the batting average. In Olsen's case, I could see him giving you value at the number that you ranked him. I feel like he's a couple rounds behind that just because it's going to be so hard for him to keep up that homer to fly ball rate. He was only the fourth player in history to have 20 or more homers and fewer than five doubles in a season.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to because if we rank, for example, Chris Davis with a K at number 60, like in the 60s,
yeah.
Why can't Matt Olson do exactly what Chris Davis does? He just hasn't done it yet.
Same power. I don't think it's the same power. I think Greg Bird's power is better than Matt Olson's.
I think Greg Bird's is right there too. I think all three of them could hit 40 home runs.
This is the thing. If you're looking at it from a ballpark perspective, that he was able to put the ball over the wall in that park so often, I'm with you on that. I just feel like there's natural aggression built in, and he had everything go right. I think at the end of the year, the homer total at the end of this season is going to be pretty close to last year, and the value is going to be a little bit better overall.
You know what nobody's talking about? I'm not going to say this. Ballparks don't matter, but they don't matter as much as they did 3 or 4 years ago with this new baseball and the way everybody's trying to hit home runs. They just don't. If Chris Davis can hit 40 home runs in consecutive seasons in Oakland, all right, and Hunter Renfroe can hit 30 in like two thirds of a season in San Diego, the ballpark does not matter. Even in these pitcher parks, you can still hit for a ton of power, I think. So I'm not worried. If Matt Olson was playing in a park that was in Philadelphia, okay, obviously, we would like him a little bit more. Or Yankee Stadium with that short porch. I mean, look, Greg Bird has the advantage over Olson because of the short porch, but I don't think Matt Olson in Oakland is a problem. I just don't. All right, Kyle, one more.
I don't either.
Here we got a last question here. The not-so-closeted A's fan notes that Tommy Pham, Merrifield, and Smoke were all league winners at basically no cost last season. They're surprises for a reason, but he wants you to give him a few names to look at this year that could provide similar value and potentially be a league changer.
A league changer.
Nobody's, eh? What, outside top 250 we'll take?
It's a good thing. I think I did that, what day was it? Yesterday? I wrote about players who just aren't being sleeper bats for deep leagues. You'll see it as the second headline, ESPN Fantasy Baseball, and Brian Anderson and Colin Moran were at the top of my list there because I think third base has a bunch of guys like that this season who nobody's going to draft. I mean, what Whit Merrifield did was pretty special. That's a lot of stolen bases, and I think it's legit. I think Kingery could do that. I think Kingery could have Whit Merrifield numbers. I don't see a lot of middle infielders that I project for like that many home runs and that many stolen bases. Do you?
No, I'm scrolling through who we have outside the top 250. Jameson Taillon among the pitching side, kind of like the skills there, but just everything went wrong last year.
There's a million pitchers.
Jose Martinez. I think Jose Martinez actually has a much better path to some at-bats than people think, especially
Matt Carpenter
starting
on the DL, injury. I bet Monday we're talking about Matt Carpenter on the DL. I hope not, Frankie.
Oh, I hope not.
I don't want anybody on the DL. I'm not saying I'm just saying, like, at some point when you get 3 weeks in the spring training or 5 weeks, like, you start to think, all right, this guy's not going to be ready.
We mentioned Malik Smith and Jesse Winker here. Are those two names that could potentially fall into this?
Absolutely. I'm not rushing out to fill infield or starting pitcher because I actually do see a lot of guys who are being undrafted that I would be fine having. Nobody's drafting Carlos Gomez at Tampa Bay. Do you know what he's averaged the last 3 years? He has averaged only like 113 games played. Okay, that's not good.
Yeah.
But he's also averaged like 14 homers and 16 steals. So if you're going to put up those numbers for me over 4 months, hey, I'll take that.
He's owned in 8.2% of ESPN leagues.
Really low.
Undrafted tier. Yeah, you're right. Nobody's giving him any credit. Nobody's giving Lewis Brinson any credit. If he could kind of clean up the contact rate, he could be one of those guys. And as a matter of fact, they'll give him the at-bats in order to potentially make that happen. I think Germán Márquez on the pitching side is one who's got good skills, and I know he's in a terrible situation, but could very well surprise.
Leonis Martín.
Ooh, I got one.
That's a guy. Leonis Martín could be a 12-homer, 30-steal guy. Hasn't he done that before?
Yeah, you're right. He's going to be getting the playing time regularly.
He's Detroit's leadoff hitter. And I know you're thinking, Detroit, Miami, these teams are horrible. You know what? They play the same 162 games as everybody else. And you may not want to invest in their pitchers. I'll give you that, okay? But their hitters, Leonis Martin in 2016 had 15 home runs, 24 steals. He has a pair of 30-steal seasons to his credit. He's not going to get on base, but Detroit doesn't care. They just want a guy who's going to play center field every day. Leonis Martin is going to win people leagues this year. And he's not even getting drafted.
Victor Robles falls into this tier. And there's a guy like that that I think of the rookie class does not get mentioned at all. And if a couple things break right, Alex Verdugo could fall into this class.
I guess so. I mean, there's a big difference between talking about a 30-year-old outfielder and a guy like Victor Robles. I mean, one of them is not forgotten. Nobody's forgetting about Victor Robles. They're just not drafting him because they don't see where he's going to play. Yeah, Verdugo's the same. Yeah,
they're in the same situation.
Absolutely.
And by the way, plays on the team where we learned the lesson last year, not to ever discount Cody Bellinger.
All right, great hash browns as usual from great Kyle. He does a great job. He's so great. He'll be back on Monday to give us some more. What else do we have here? National Everything You Think Is Wrong Day. I probably shouldn't have said that on a podcast where we're giving advice, but I don't really care. Created for people to realize they are not always right. All right. Celebrated by avoiding saying I think. I hope I didn't say that at all on this show.
That's
the only national day we have? Is national
it
everything?
Will!
And no cookies?
Everything we said time? Will happen.
Isn't every day National Cookie Day?
It really should be, Leo. It really should be. And Kyle, I promise I will tweet you today with whatever Cookie Monster has on his mind. I know how much you love that.
My day just got brighter.
We're like children in that. I won't tweet out anything else, like no information about baseball or football. I don't care about this signing or Trubisky, but Cookie Monster, I'll retweet him.
Yes.
He's a smart dude.
He's a very smart dude. All right. I think we're done. We're all smart dudes. We'll be back on Monday and, give you information from the weekend, tell you what's going on, get you ready for the season, which will be 10 days away on Monday. How about that? Get ready for your NCAA tournament. It's lots of fun. If you're listening really early, maybe you can still do it. The bracket's locked already, right? By the
locked
first game.
At noon, yeah.
So I guess not. But anyway, we try. We do the best we can.
You'll be able to do a second chance bracket if you bust your bracket.
Right, a second chance bracket. Yep. Explain what that is. I don't know
I'll
what that
need
is.
That.
On ESPN.com or in the ESPN app, you can start at the Sweet 16 in the second weekend and go from there if your bracket's already busted.
Ah, wow. I hope Villanova's still around.
Me too.
Thanks, as always, to Anthony Calatayude, pushing all the buttons, and Leo, the editorial watchdog. Let's make that a thing on Twitter, and Kyle Soppe, who's just awesome. For Tristan, I'm Eric. Have an awesome weekend.
Everything is awesome.
Cookies raise your IQ.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.